This is one of a series of lectures using the studies of my God's Plan for Man book and my Bible chart. I am Finest Jennings Dake, and the subject of the lecture is the Book of Revelation. So many people think that the Book of Revelation is the hardest book outside of the Book of Daniel, and that it cannot be understood by the average person. You have to be some sort of a superman, some sort of a specialist in prophecy in order to get anything at all out of the Book of Revelation. But this is not true. The Bible is very clear that the Book of Revelation is one of the most simple books in the world to understand. In fact, if there is one book in the Bible more simple than all other books, it is the Book of Revelation. Because it is an unveiling, the lifting up of a curtain, the raising of a curtain so that people can see what's back of the curtain, and all of them can see what's back of it alike by just looking. That's what the Book of Revelation is. It says, the revelation of or from Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him to show, not to hide from his servants, but to show unto his servants things which must shortly come to pass. And he sent and signified it by his angel unto his servant John. In verse 11, John was told to write a book. He said, what thou seest, write in the book, and send to the seven churches which are in Asia, unto Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea. So John had his instructions, and he was supposed to write this book consisting of three main divisions. But before he was told to write the first division, he was shown a vision of Christ in the midst of the candlesticks, as you read in chapter 1, verses 12 to 16. He saw Christ, saw the details of the vision, and was told in verse 19 to write this vision, or write the things which thou hast seen. You have just got through seeing Christ, John, and therefore I want you to record in the first division of your book what you have seen, which John did. And no doubt that's why we have it in our first chapter of Revelation as it is. So chapter 1 of Revelation is the first division of the book. Then in chapter 1:19, John was told to write the things which are, that is, the things concerning the churches. Everything that he was supposed to write to the churches was to be contained in seven short letters, as proved in chapters 2 and 3. In chapter 2:1, he was told under the angel of the church at Ephesus write, that he did that to the church of Smyrna and Pergamos and Thyatira and Sardis and Philadelphia and Laodicea until he had written seven letters to seven pastors of seven local congregations of believers, actually portraying true conditions as then existed in seven local churches in Asia Minor at that particular time. Now, there isn't anything mysterious about these letters. You all no doubt know what a letter is. A letter is a communication of some kind between one person to another. And there is nothing mysterious and should never be in any letter that you ever write to anybody. And no doubt none of you have ever received any letter that was full of mysteries, as people think the Book of Revelation is. We must learn to understand the book right. Now, these seven letters actually portray true conditions as then existing in seven local congregations of believers in John's day. So John was told to write to each pastor, told him he was told exactly what to say, and that was all. And when he got through writing one letter, he was told to address another pastor and write another letter, till he had finished seven short letters, as are recorded in the second division of John's book called the Revelation. Now, the trouble with us today is that we have made church ages out of these seven letters. Bible scholars are not satisfied with believing that those messages in those seven letters contain messages for Christians of today, but they've had to add the tone of mystery to it. and make people think that they are so difficult and so complicated, and that they do not refer to the church today at all. Or if they do refer to the church, why, it's just part of it. Part of these letters refer to the church, and the rest of it is all over with. For example, the letter to the church at Ephesus. The average Bible scholar thinks of this letter as referring to the apostolic church age, the church of the first 100 years. Then the church at Smyrna, they associate that letter with the Christians of the second and third centuries after Christ, and so on, until they have stretched these seven letters out over the whole 1900 years since Christ went to heaven, trying to make it appear that these letters refer to church ages or phases of church history, when Jesus Christ no doubt had nothing in mind of that nature. We ought to believe that these letters actually portrayed conditions in those days, and that they still give instruction to Christians in every church, in every generation, throughout this age until the rapture of the church. For example, if the first century Christians were the Ephesian period, as they call it, why then, that period, or after that first century, then that letter no longer applies to Christians throughout this age. And if the Smyrnian letter referred to conditions in the second century, then when those two centuries were over, then the letter to Smyrna had no further meaning. And so it goes. Men have divided these seven letters into seven church periods. And the great argument today is whether we're living in the Philadelphian or the Laodicean period. Well, the fact of it is, Jesus Christ wanted John to write certain letters to certain churches, rebuking them for certain things, commending them for certain things, and promising them certain things. And these letters were to apply to all Christians in every generation from that day until the rapture of the church. So the idea of seven church letters, that's all wrong, completely out of the question. We might as well take the 14 letters of Paul and make 14 church ages out of them. And we might as well, while we're doing it, take the seven general epistles from James to Jude and make seven more church ages out of them. So that would make us 28 church periods. And yes, I happen to remember a very little letter referred to or recorded in the 15th chapter of the book of Acts, just about 3 or 4 lines. And I guess we'll take that one and make a very, very small age out of it. Oh, you say, we do not do those things with Paul's letters and with the general epistles and with that little letter you're talking about. Well, why do we do it with the seven letters in Revelation 2 and 3? Who gave us the authority to make them refer to church ages, and Paul's letters not referring to any age? Or that the seven general epistles, that they do not refer to any age? Why not let us take these letters to the seven churches in the same literal sense we understand the letters in the other books of the New Testament, as actually teaching Christians how to live, what to do, giving them proper instructions along certain lines? That way we could all understand the seven letters in the book of Revelation without worrying our little heads as to what the meanings are. Some men go to the extreme. For example, I heard one great scholar not long ago. He said that the letter to the church at Thyatira had mentioned in it the woman called Jezebel. And he said, you know that Jezebel lived way back in the days of Ahab in Israel, and not in a local congregation of Christians. He left us with the idea that it would be impossible for there to be another Jezebel in the history of the whole world. But why couldn't there be a Jezebel in the days of Ahab and another Jezebel in the local church at Thyatira? You see, we get too many meanings out of certain scriptures we have no business even bothering with. The thing for us to do is to recognize that these seven letters portrayed conditions in seven local congregations of Christians, and they will continue to apply in the Christian church throughout this whole age until the rapture of the church. Then, when the things of chapter 4:1 on through the rest of the book of Revelation will begin to be fulfilled, those letters are through with. In other words, the Christians to whom they apply will be completely translated and taken out of the world. And that brings us back now to our first chapter and verse 19 a third time, where we read of the third division of John's writing. It was to be the things which must be after the churches. Or it says, I will show thee things which must be after the churches. That's in the fourth chapter, verse 1. When John was looking for what next to write about, Christ had disappeared. And suddenly, he looked up to heaven and he said, I saw a door open in heaven, and the first voice which had been directing me what to write about all the time came down through that door and said, come up hither, come up hither. I will show thee things which must be after these things, which must be after the churches. And if we could just understand how utterly simple a thing like that is. Everything concerning the churches are found in chapters 2 hereafter what?
In the letters.
Well, naturally, hereafter the churches, which he just got through writing about in chapters 2 and 3. So if we could understand this one fact, that everything from the fourth chapter of Revelation, verse 1 on, must be after the churches, we would have a very simple book to understand. But when men emphasize this, and I've seen many, many books where men did emphasize that fact, but I've never seen one thus far or today that emphasize it like it should be, that everything from the fourth chapter of Revelation on must be after the churches, and leave it go at that. At least we know when the events of Revelation 4:1 on through the rest of the Revelation will be fulfilled. It will be fulfilled after the churches, after the rapture of the church, after the church age, and not during the church age. For the word church is found 19 times in the first three chapters of this book of Revelation, and not once in the rest of the book concerning Israel, or which concerns Israel in the latter days. So after the rapture of the church, we are to expect for the first time every detail of chapters 4:1 through Revelation 22, verse 5. These scriptures will be fulfilled after the rapture. First, we have chapters 4 and 5. Of the book of Revelation. Just simply a vision of what John saw when he got up to heaven. When he was caught up through that door into heaven, he said, I saw a throne was set, and one sat on the throne that was to look upon like a jasper and a sardine stone. He said, I saw a rainbow round about the throne. Lightning proceeded from the throne. And in the right hand of him who sat on the throne, there was a book sealed with seven seals. And he said there were 24 thrones around that one throne on which were seated 24 elders. And there were four living creatures called beasts in your version around the throne. Each one had a different face. Each one had four wings each, or six wings each. And we find that there was a lamb that came before the throne and took the book out of the right hand of him who sat on the throne. And he began to open the seals. Thus, you see, in chapters 4 and 5, there isn't anything mysterious at all, nothing symbolic in this whole two chapters outside of the lamb itself and the seven lamps of fire burning before the throne. There is nothing symbolic about the throne, because God sits on a literal throne on the planet called heaven and runs his vast business from his headquarters. 26 times in your Bible it is stated that Jesus Christ was exalted to sit down on the right hand of God in heaven. But here now the Son of God was symbolized by a lamb who came and took the book out of the right hand of God who sat on the throne. but realize that a throne is literal and that the person sitting on it was literal, a real person. And the book he had in his right hand was literal. The rainbow was literal. The lightning proceeding from the throne was literal. The 24 thrones on which sat 24 elders, that was literal. And the four living creatures are literally four angelic beings calling attention to God's holiness and crying day and night, "Holy, holy, holy, Lord God Almighty, which was, which is to come, the Almighty." What's hard about chapters 4 and 5 to understand at all? I don't see one thing mysterious about it. If we were taken up to heaven with John at that time, and we would have seen what he said he saw, we would have describing the things that we saw, and it would be in perfect harmony with what John saw, or else one of us would be telling the wrong kind of a story. So take the chapters 4 and 5 of Revelation just in a literal, sensible way, just like you read it there. You don't have to make it symbolic of anything. As I say, the Lamb is symbolic because 27 times in the Bible, Jesus Christ is symbolized by a lamb. And that lamb comes before the throne, and he takes the seven seal book out of the right hand of God, and he begins to break the seven seals. So that takes us through chapters 4 and 5 without any difficulty. And if you'll read it in that simple sense the next time, you won't have anything difficult about it at all. Now then, we come to the 6th to the 19th chapters of Revelation, the chapters which portray conditions on earth or events on earth between the rapture and the second coming of Jesus Christ to the earth. In the 6th chapter, we have a picture of the Lamb breaking the first seal, verses 1 and 2, and a white horse rider came forth. The rider was given a sword, he had a crown, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. In the next two verses, we have a red horse. And it said to him that he should take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another with a sword. And in the next two verses, we have a black horse and rider. The rider had a pair of balances in his hand. And a voice said to him, "A measure of wheat for a penny, and three measures of barley for a penny, see thou hurt not the oil or the wine." Measuring foodstuffs like this, picture famine. Then we have two horsemen, not one, two horsemen in the next two verses. We read that there came a pale horse, which was called death. In the Greek, it is a green horse. And hell followed him. So instead of four horsemen of the apocalypse, we have literally five horsemen in the apocalypse, the first four seals. Death and hell following, and swallowing up the millions that are killed by the white horse rider, the red horse rider, and the black horse rider. This pictures literally the rise of the Antichrist in the first case, the white horse rider, going forth conquering and to conquer among the 10 kingdoms of the old Roman Empire which we dealt with before. And the red horse rider, a picture of war, that's natural, following an ambitious conqueror. Then famine naturally follows wars. And then death and hell naturally swallows up the millions of people that are killed in famines, pestilences, and in war. Now in the fifth seal, when the Lamb had broken that seal, he saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the witness of Jesus, for the word of God. They cried out, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth?" White robes were given to every one of them. It was said they should rest yet for a little season, till the rest of their brethren that should be killed as they were should be fulfilled. This is a picture of the first martyrs that are killed after the rapture of the church among the Gentiles and the Jews of that period. Then we read in the sixth seal, when it was broken, the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, the moon was turned to blood, stars fell to the earth, darkness came and an earthquake that moved every island and mountain out of its place, and men fled to the mountains and to the dens and to the caves of the earth, crying for mercy Hide us from the presence of God who sat on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For in verse 17 of that sixth chapter it says, the day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? Then between the sixth and the seventh seals, we have the seventh chapter of the book of Revelation, a picture of two companies of redeemed. In the first eight verses, you have a picture of the 144,000 Jews who will be sealed for protection to go through the trumpet judgments. For it was said to the first four trumpet judgment angels that were soon to blow their trumpets that they should not hurt the earth or the grass or the trees or the seas till we have sealed the servants of our God in their forehead. And we read, I heard the number of them that were sealed, and 144,000 Israelites, not Jehovah Witnesses, not Seventh-day Adventists, or not any other group of people, simply Israelites, 12,000 from the tribe of Gad, 12,000 from the tribe of Issachar, 12 from the tribe of Judah, and so on, until he had named 12 of 13 tribes of Israel. Well, 12,000 from each tribe that were sealed to be protected by the trumpet judgment angels when the plagues of the trumpets were to blow soon. And to prove what the seal of the living God is, in chapter 14, verses 1 to 5, we read, I saw a lamb on Mount Zion with him, 144,000, having his father's name written in their forehead. Now that's what the seal of God is. It is not keeping Saturday as the Sabbath at all. It's the name of God written on the forehead, as plainly stated in Revelation 14, verse 1. Now then, that brings us to a happy thought, that even Christians, all Christians, who are not of the 144,000, are also going to be stamped with the name of God on their foreheads. For we read in Revelation 3:12, to him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God. He shall go no more out. I will write upon him the name of my God, and the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem, and I will write upon him my new name. So you see, all believers eventually will have the name of God stamped on their foreheads. All right, now we leave the sixth seal and come to the second company of redeemed, pictured in chapter 7. He saw a great multitude of Gentiles of all kindreds and tongues and peoples and nations stood before the throne in heaven, having been translated there. And they were crying, salvation and strength and honor and power and glory unto the Lord God Almighty. And in the midst of all that praise, John asked somebody, who are these? And the angel answered and said, these are they that came out of the great tribulation, having washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. These are the continued martyrs of the tribulation period between the rapture and the second coming of Jesus Christ to the earth. In chapter 8, verse 1, when the Lamb had broken the seventh seal, we read, there was silence in heaven but the space of half an hour. How in the world could we get anything mysterious out of a simple statement like that? Heaven silent for one half an hour. Looked like anybody could understand that, even if they just heard it read casually. You don't have to read these things and question them and add a lot to them. Or you say, what else happens other than the half an hour? I don't know. Nothing is said about it, and I'm not going to tell you anything about it because I don't know any more than I read here in the book itself. And I can be satisfied that all that will happen as stated here is silence in heaven for the space of half an hour, and I'll let it go at that. And if you would, you'd be better off. Because you go to adding things to it and doing things like that, you're warned in the 22nd chapter of this book that if any man will add to the book, God will add to him the plagues that are written in the book. And if any man will take from the words of this prophecy, God will take away his part out of the book of life and out of the things that are written in the book. So why do we have to worry about it? Can't there be silence in heaven for the space of half an hour without us trying to add a lot to it to make it more complete and more mystical? Well, we're through now with the seals. We come to seven angels who were given seven trumpets to blow. The first four trumpet judgment angels were told, hurt not the earth, or the grass, or the trees, or the seas, till we have sealed the servants of our God in their forehead. That is, the sealing of the 104,000 must be completed before these judgments begin, or before the trumpets begin to blow by these angels. At any rate, now after the silence of heaven by the space of half an hour, we have the first angel blowing his trumpet, and hail, fire mingled with blood was cast out into the earth, and one-third of the trees was burned up and all green grass. Then we read of another angel blowing his trumpet, and this time a burning mountain falls upon the sea. One-third of the ships are destroyed, one-third of the creatures die, and then we have the next one, a burning mountain fell upon the waters, or a star, and that star made the waters bitter, and many men died of the bitterness of the waters. Then the fourth angel blew his trumpet, and one-third of the sun, moon, and stars were stricken with darkness, so that they shone not for the third part of them. Then between the fourth and fifth judgment angels, we have another mighty angel flying in the midst of heaven, saying, woe, 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 by reason of the three angels that are yet to sound, by reason of the fifth, sixth, and seventh angels that are yet to sound. And immediately the fifth angel blew his trumpet, and an angel came down from heaven, opening the bottomless pit. Smoke came out of the bottomless pit, which darkened the sun. And out of the smoke came demon creatures called locusts. They had bodies like horses, faces like men, hair like women, and they had wings, and the sound of their wings were as the sound of many chariots running to battle. They had serpent-headed tails and scorpion stings. We read that these men, or these persons or beings, will torment men for 5 months, and men will desire to die, and death shall flee from them. Then the sixth angel blew his trumpet, and out of the same bottomless pit came 200 million demon horsemen. Think of it, 200 million demon horsemen. They are also described. They have bodies like horses, but heads like lions, teeth like lions, and out of their mouths issue fire, smoke, and brimstone, by which one-third of men are killed at a certain hour of a certain day of a certain year. Now, some people today in modern prophetical books are declaring that these 200 million demon creatures out of the bottomless pit are really symbolic of 200 million Chinese soldiers. Why, China isn't even referred to in this whole setup here. We're talking about demons coming out of the bottomless pit. And no Chinese soldier could ever look as horrible as one of these kind of creatures. And there wouldn't be any sense to make a Chinese soldier one of these creatures, or to make one of these creatures symbolic of a Chinese soldier. All that's just pure human nonsense. But we can believe it literally as it is, that these creatures will come out of the bottomless pit. They are divided into 50 million horsemen to an army, led by four angels bound in the river Euphrates, and they go in four directions to slay one-third of men at a certain hour of a certain day of a certain year. And when they strike, one-third of men on earth are dead. Now that's to be taken literally. Why can't we take these things as literally as they read, instead of making a lot of fools out of ourselves and God too? There's no need of it, no excuse for it whatsoever. We need to take these things literally. We need to take what we read, not what we do not read. Then following this, John said he saw an angel come down from heaven, placing one foot on the sea and one foot on the earth, raising a hand and swearing to him that liveth forever and ever, that delay, time should be no longer in your King James Version, but literally in the Greek, delay should be no longer. But in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he should begin to sound, the mystery of God should be completed, which he did announce to his servants, the prophets. This angel gave to John a book to eat, and when John ate it, it was bitter to his inward parts, but sweet to his taste, symbolizing that the messages that he had to give from this angel were bitter to give out. Then we read of the two witnesses that will appear on earth. In the 11th chapter of the book of Revelation, the first two verses, before we get to the two witnesses, picture the Jerusalem of today being given over into the hands of the Gentiles again. So the Bible does teach that Israel was supposed to get the city of Jerusalem, and it also teaches that Israel will lose the city of Jerusalem in the middle of the 7 years when Antichrist comes to full power over the 10 kingdoms. For he will make war on Israel according to the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel, verse 40 to 44, where we read, "The king of the north shall come against the king of the south, and the king of the south against the king of the north like a whirlwind, and the king of the north shall enter into the glorious land, Palestine. Many countries shall be overthrown. These shall escape out of his hands, even Edom and Moab and chief of the children of Ammon. He shall stretch his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape." Thus we read that Israel will lose Jerusalem again, and then will regain it again a few days or a few weeks prior to the second coming of Christ itself. For when Antichrist conquers Russia and Germany and China and the countries north and east of the 10 kingdoms during the last 3.5 years of this age, he then gathers all the nations down against Jerusalem to battle to destroy Israel, a thing he wanted to do 3.5 years previously and would have done if he had not been hindered by these new wars made against him from the countries north and east. Antichrist then will take Jerusalem again. Thus Jews will lose part of it at least, because we read in Zechariah 14 that half of the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations, as when he fought in the day of battle. His feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east. The Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof, half of it toward the east and half of it toward the west. There shall be a very great valley, and ye shall flee to the valley of the mountains. Yea, ye shall flee, shall fled before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. The Lord my God cometh, and all the saints with thee. And in verse 9, said the Lord shall be king over all the earth, and that day there shall be one Lord, and his name one. Thus Israel will lose control of Jerusalem again in the last few days. Then Christ will deliver the Jews from the Gentiles and will set up a kingdom in the world forever, even forever and ever. All right, now that we have then in the 11th chapter, following the Gentiles being given the Holy City, we find that the next event will be that of two men who will appear from heaven on earth to live here, being clothed in sackcloth, with power from God to smite the earth with plagues as often as they will, and carry out the ministry as stated of them in the 11th chapter of Revelation, verses 3 to 12. Then we read in verse 7, "When they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war on them, and shall overcome them, and shall kill them." Thus, whoever these two men are, they are two men who have never died, and will never die until they are killed by the Antichrist at the end of their 3.5 years of ministry. Now, in Zechariah 4:14, the prophet Zechariah, 600 years before John saw these two men in heaven, he saw them in heaven, and he asked the Lord, "Who are these?" And the Lord said, "These are the two anointed ones, which stand before the God of all the earth," which, according to Revelation 11:4, says these are the two olive trees and the two candlesticks standing before the God of all the earth. So they are two men who were taken to heaven without dying, and who will come down to the earth and die at the hands of the Antichrist, who will fulfill the prophecies of Zechariah 4, Malachi 4, and Revelation 11 and other scriptures, even the 20th chapter of the book of Ezekiel, verses 33 to 44. They are none other than Enoch and Elijah, the only two men that were ever taken to heaven without seeing death, and could go to heaven and die at the hands of the Antichrist. Then in chapter 12, we have the woman and the man-child, and the casting out of the dragon to the earth. This we will deal with in another lecture. But the woman represents national Israel, and the man-child, the 144,000 Jews out of Israel, When Antichrist breaks his 7 years covenant, God will translate the 144,000, all who are saved and born again, and whose names are in the book of life, as stated in Isaiah 66, verses 7 and 8, and Daniel 12, 1, and Revelation 12, where we find the man-child was caught up to God and to his throne. In chapter 14, we have the 144,000 in heaven, singing a song that no man can sing but the 144,000 which were redeemed from the earth. The last time they are mentioned before this is on earth. That is before the catching up of the man-child. They are on earth in chapter 9, 4. Special direction is given of the fifth and sixth trumpet judgment angels that they should not hurt those men that had the seal of God in their forehead. So you see they're being protected through the trumpet judgments and are caught up to heaven as the man-child under the seventh trumpet, where in chapter 14 they are in heaven singing a song that no man can sing but the 144,000. Then we have the casting out of the devil in the 12th chapter of Revelation, verses 7 to 12. Then we have the war against Israel. Following that, the dragon casts out of his mouth water as a flood to swallow the woman, and the earth helps the woman. The woman gets safe in the wilderness, and the dragon is wroth, and he goes back to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Now, following this 12th chapter of Revelation, the 13th chapter tells us about the rise of the Antichrist, and how he will be given power over all kindreds and tongues and nations for 42 months. This we will also deal with in another lecture, when we show you that the Antichrist will not rule America or be a worldwide dictator, and that the tribulation is not and cannot possibly be worldwide. We're going to show you that the Antichrist is from the Roman Empire, and he rules the 10 kingdoms inside the Roman Empire and no more. Then, according to Daniel 11:44, when he does get power over the 10 countries north and east of the Roman Empire, including Germany and Russia and Japan and China and India and all the northern eastern countries north and east of the 10 kingdoms, will make war on this Antichrist of the 10 kingdoms. Antichrist will be the final victor over them in the last 3.5 years of this age. And then he leads these newly conquered countries together with his 10 kingdoms, together with nations that will cooperate with him through the ministry of the three unclean spirits. They all come down against Jerusalem to destroy the Jews at the second coming of Jesus Christ. And then is when the battle of Armageddon will be fought, as pictured in the 63rd chapter of Isaiah, Joel 2 and 3, Ezekiel 38 and 39, and Revelation 19. These and many other scriptures picture the battle of Armageddon at the second coming of Jesus Christ to the earth. All right, now following this, we have the 14th chapter of Revelation, the Lamb in heaven with the 144,000. We have three messenger angels flying in the midst of heaven. One preaches the everlasting gospel, one preaches the doom of Babylon, and one preaches that if any man worships the beast and the Antichrist and receives his mark in the right hand or in the forehead, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured without mixture in the cup of his indignation. He shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the Lamb and in the presence of the holy angels, and the smoke of their torment ascendeth up forever and ever. They have no rest day or night, whoever worships the beast in his image, and whoever receives his mark in the right hand or in the forehead. Following this 14th chapter of several other parenthetical statements, we have in chapters 15 and 16, the seven vile judgments poured out. The first vile judgment causes boils to come upon men, and then all the sea is turned to blood in the next one, and then rivers are turned to blood instead of made bitter, as in the first 3.5 years under the seven trumpets. And then following that, the sun scorches men with fire, not one-third of it dark, as the fourth trumpet says in the first 3.5 years of this seven-year period. But the sun literally scorches men with fire. Then we read of darkness coming upon the kingdom of the Antichrist, and they gnawed their tongue for pain. Then we have the river Euphrates dried up under the sixth vial, preparing the way of the kings of the east. After Antichrist conquers the countries north and east, then these countries are forced to come down against Jerusalem to fight against Jesus Christ and the Jews at the Battle of Armageddon. So the river Euphrates will be literally dried up. Then we're in the 16th chapter of Revelation, verses 17 to 21, of the pouring out of the seventh vial, and great hailstones fall to the earth from 56 to 114 pounds apiece in weight. And then we have the idea of a great earthquake such as never was on the earth before and ever will be like it again. And we read the cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon came in remembrance before God, and the city Jerusalem was divided into three parts, and the second coming of Christ takes place while the Antichrist and his armies are surrounding Jerusalem and have already taken half of the city Jerusalem in battle. Then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations and will set his feet on the Mount of Olives, and then the Lord will be victor over the Antichrist and his armies in one day. In one day. And then the Lord will set up a kingdom in the world forever, even forever and ever. Following that, we have the marriage, or we have the after the marriage supper of the Lamb and the second advent of Christ, which produces the armies that will come from heaven to fight against Jesus, fight against the Antichrist and his armies. Marriage supper, 19th chapter, verse 1 to 10. Then the second advent of Christ after the marriage supper. This itself proves, you see, that the rapture has taken place before the second coming of Christ, because the supper is eaten in heaven before heaven is open and the second coming of Christ actually takes place. Then we read of the judgment of the nations in Matthew 24 and 25 and Daniel 7 and other scriptures. Then we have the 1,000 years reign of Christ mentioned in the 20th chapter of the book of Revelation. It's mentioned six times in that one chapter. And there is a period of Christ going to reign on the earth for the purpose of ridding the earth of all rebellion. 1 Corinthians 15:24, then cometh the end when he shall have delivered up the kingdom to God, even the Father, when he shall have put down all rule and all authority and power. For he must reign till he has put all enemies under his feet. The last enemy that shall be destroyed is death, and when all things shall be subdued under him, it is manifested that he is accepted which did put all things under him. And when all things shall be subdued under him, the Son himself shall become subject unto him that did put all things under him, that God may be all and in all. After the 1,000 years reign of Christ, Christ will continue to reign on the earth with God the Father, with God the Holy Spirit, with resurrected saints of all ages. They will reign on the earth forever, even forever and ever. So that we have the coming eternal societies of natural men ruled by resurrected men in all coming ages. Then we have the renovation of the heavens and the earth for fire in Revelation 20, verses 7 to 10. That means a cleansing, a purification of the heavens and the earth, not the annihilation of the heavens and the earth. Then we have the new heavens and the new earth in Revelation 21 and 22. God ruling on earth in person. For we read, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he shall dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. God himself shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. There be no more death, tears, former things are passed away. He that sat upon the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. Thus we have the book of Revelation from the first verse to the last verse, a picture of a series of events which must shortly come to pass. The first three chapters during the church age, and chapter Daniel, and during the tribulation period, 20, the millennium, and chapter 21 and 22, the new heavens and the new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness forever.